Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Gene.
And it's Jeff, the host with the most.
And on today's episode of Faith Grind Spire, we have Leonard Steinberg.
Madison Square Garden.
From Compass.
Hi, I'm Leonard Steinberg. I'm the chief evangelist from Compass. And praise be. Part of a real estate movement around the country, and I'm very thrilled to be here.
Oh, this week's episode is powerful, man.
Off the hook.
Tune in right
now. Off the hook.
It's starting right now.
Boom.
We are amazing because our passion is limitless and our drive is intense. Therefore, you will not deny our grind. You are now listening to the Faith Grind Inspire podcast with your host, Gene Alert.
Welcome back to another great episode of Faith Grind Inspire podcast. I am your host, Gene Alert.
And I'm your co-host, Jeffrey Patrick.
And today we have a very, very special guest.
That's right. Indeed.
The man himself.
The $3 billion man. His team is responsible for $3 billion. I hate to put it out there.
Mr. Leonard Steinberg.
That's right.
Mr. Real Estate himself. That's what I call you.
No. He's actually the chief evangelist.
Of Compass. Yeah, praise be.
Chief evangelist. We're not even going to get into all of that. If you want to know what a chief evangelist is, Google it. All right? Leonard is here to answer important questions, okay?
Yes.
Leonard, what's your favorite color?
My favorite color is red.
Okay. Oh, okay. So let's get it cracking. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Leonard, how you came about in real estate and, you know, where we're going from here.
Well, I actually stumbled into real estate. I started in the fashion business and I had been doing that for almost a decade when I burned out, had a midlife crisis at the age of 30. And decided I wanted to do something different with my life, and I embarked on a musical career. But one should only call it a career if you can make money doing it, which I didn't. So it wasn't a musical career, it was a musical blank. I quit after a year and explored real estate, really, got my license. And in fact, my anniversary is coming up this September.
Oh, nice.
And it's been 23 years that I've been in this business, wow. So a long time. And I thought I'd stay for a few months and learn something, and I stayed.
Now, Leonard, when you say stumbled into real estate, right? Coming from fashion, then going to music, right? That's still entertainment. How do you just stumble into real estate, you know?
Gene wants to know.
Yeah.
I woke up from a bad dream. No, it really was something I'd always been very fascinated by. I'd wanted actually when I was a kid to become an architect.
Got it.
And I would always sketch homes and I would always go to open houses. In fact, I used to go to open houses when I was a young teen. I redesigned my parents' home when I was, you know, 11, 12 years old. I was very, very intrigued by architecture, but then I thought I was too stupid to do architecture because my scientific skills were weak. Although my mathematics skills were okay, my scientific skills were terrible, and I thought I would not make it in architecture as a career. And that's when I embarked on a fashion career. So there was always something that was lingering back there that drew me towards property. And I didn't think I'd become an architect because I couldn't. I didn't think I could. And certainly entering into the real estate sales arena was maybe an opportunity to do something within the architectural space. I'd actually built two houses while I was in the fashion industry as a pseudo hobby, one to live in. And that got me a little more excited again about re-entering that world.
Where?
I actually, when I arrived in America, I stayed in Dallas.
Okay.
And then I divided my time between Dallas, New York, Los Angeles, and Atlanta, traveling for fashion. So I was like,
wow.
It was a dog and pony show.
Yes, yes. So when you say you came into America, from where?
South Africa. I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa.
Okay.
Yes. And I left at a very turbulent time, very, very turbulent time. And I thought actually South Africa was, you know, going to erupt into war. And fortunately, Nelson Mandela was the most extraordinary leader who transitioned South Africa peacefully from what was really a disaster zone. And miraculously, it has, you know, become an extraordinary country.
Big up to Nelson Mandela, too.
Yes, by the way.
Well, Nelson Mandela was an extraordinary leader because, you know what, I think we can all learn from him today because what he did, which was so remarkable, he could bring two sides together and find a common ground.
Yeah.
And I think today everything's so divisive and so one-sided and extreme that we should listen more to Nelson Mandela's words.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Leonard, Can I call you Leonard? I mean,
it's better than Leonard, which some French people call.
Leonard. I'll call you Lenny Love. How about Lenny Love?
Oh,
I'll call you Lenny Love.
So Lenny is what my parents called me as a kid, and I swore to them I would disown them if they continued calling me that. They didn't stop calling me that name.
Okay, all right. We'll stick to Mr. Steinberg.
No, Mr. Steinberg, only if you're nasty.
Oh, okay. Leonard it is.
Perfect.
All right. So once I come into the immediate vicinity of an individual who has influence, such as yourself, who's, you know, CEO or leader of a company, of a major organization, I tend to want to ask serious questions.
Uh-oh. Right? I'm ready.
And one of the questions I want to ask you is, because I read that the chief evangelist has a way of communicating with the company.
Yes.
Right? And I want you to, my question is, what is your communication style and how can it be categorized in a way where we all can like understand where you're coming from? So.
Well, I think the most important things to acknowledge is that the business world is changing. And today you even saw the president, CEO actually of Bank of America talking about how these leaders of very, very large organizations that traditionally obsessed mm-hmm. with corporate profits and pleasing shareholders mm-hmm. are now speaking to a bigger picture mm-hmm. responsibility. And my way of communicating has always been one of speaking as a human being. Okay. I think it's especially important to speak as a human being with a human voice in a company that's very focused on technology. And we definitely are a unique company in that we started out as a very tech-obsessed company,
right.
But it truly has morphed into a hybrid of traditional brokerage as well as the new world of technology and brokerage. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important because I truly believe that high-tech and high-touch should coexist. And I am more of the high-touch voice in the company
right.
that speaks as a human being, speaks to other human beings in a community of 15,000 plus people who are very fragmented across the country. A lot of agents drive around in a car the whole day on their own.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Humane discourse is important for the survival of any company, especially coming from the leader. At least that's what I think.
Well, I'm not the leader. I am one of the leaders. Yeah, and I think right. what's most important to acknowledge is that the tone of any company is set from the top, but no company can exist to be successful today unless you have great people
mm-hmm.
pooled together. So Compass is really a company about amazing people pooled together under one ecosystem, but we, I think, are all very unique and individual and different people, but I do think what I try and achieve is to set a tone for the entire company, not, I hate to say the word, to aspire to, but to really set a standard for our company so that we also not only focus on the company, but mm-hmm. also become a movement for an industry that has for the longest time had a horrible reputation.
Oh, speaking of
we're
that,
getting there.
Hold on. Now, talking about the horrible reputation, but Gene is probably the person that changed my perspective of real estate agents. Okay? So when I first started to do my own step towards, you know, entrepreneurship, I came across real estate agents who were trying to get me to come in, and they were crappy people.
Yes.
They were like, I was like, wait a minute.
I can't be
associated with these type of people. What is this? You know, but like I said, Gene came along and Gene actually changed my perspective and let me see like, no. This is how you do it. This is how real agents.
Professionals.
The one thing I had that Gene changed my mind about is that he didn't come off as someone who was really concerned about the sale more than he was concerned about me.
Well, we try and instill in everyone. I think you represent this exact philosophy. And I think if I were to look at anything in my history of success, I would attribute it specifically to being obsessed with relationships and quality of service. and not obsessed with transactions. And unfortunately, there are some outstanding agents around the country and around the world, but there is a good chunk of agents around the world who give the rest of us a horrible reputation because they're so obsessed with the transaction that it really demonizes agents and in many ways gives the consumer a very false impression of the very important role that agents play in people's lives, not just for the transaction, but we play an important role in the lives of people well before something transacts and forever after. And I think that is the new era of agent that's emerging. And I think as a company, we want to instill that in the people of Compass, but we also want to instill that in the profession at large.
You know, I saw you in another interview and you said something that struck a chord with me. You said, I hate the numbers. I hate the competition that I just, what do you, you should try to be the best agent you can and then take it from there. And I was like,
it's true.
That makes sense.
Well, unfortunately, I think this like arms race to be number one, and then everyone's measuring number one differently.
Yeah.
So the prizes that are handed out at the end of this race are all a little warped and grossly exaggerated oftentimes. Worse than that, I think it instills in a lot of very good agents the sense that they have an obligation to perform XYZ dollars. And if it's only measured within a certain time period, I think that encourages people to behave badly, to do things desperately, and most importantly, not to be happy. And there's nothing worse than someone who's supposed to provide great advisory and customer service who's angry and unhappy. So I think agents should be content, happy people. And I think they should be incredibly focused on the importance of the role they play, take that role incredibly seriously, and be more obsessed with relationships and quality of service than anything else. So I hate all those competitions.
Leonard.
They bother me.
You know, go ahead. Jane.
Oh, Leonard, I agree with you. I believe, and to your point, thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
Changing your viewpoint of realtors.
You know that already.
Yeah.
You know that already.
But appreciate you. But I think the problem is real estate is one of those industries where the reward is so mass. One deal, couple thousand dollars, maybe hundreds of thousand dollars, maybe, depending on what you're selling. So people get caught up in the dollar amount, how much I could get. And then they have shows like Million Dollar Listing and, you know, Flip This House, and you're seeing the money, the end result all the time, you know? And so when you focus on the end result, I remember I just moved over to Compass, and I remember I was speaking to Alyssa, and I told her, I'm not moving to Compass for the money. I'm moving into Compass. I'm moving over to Compass for the relationships. And also because I've studied all the top leaders, including yourself, and I see that my values are aligned with yours, right? And so it's not a money play in at Compass.
But I think these reality TV shows have done the worst thing imaginable.
Worse.
It's horrible. Horrible. Because what it has done is it's almost fed the same perceptions you have of lawyers who only are charging XYZ dollars per hour.
Right.
But then you don't see the work.
The work that they do.
Right.
It's an extraordinary volume of work. And unfortunately, things don't always happen as planned. And every transaction is different.
Mm-hmm.
Every post-transaction is different. And everyone's story is different. So if you are providing a level of service that really addresses that on a really high level, that's a lot of work, a lot of energy, and a huge cost. Mm-hmm. So yes, the dollars are big, and I do think those reality TV shows are an abomination, because what they've done is they've focused exclusively on the money. Worse than that, they've portrayed the life of an agent as this, like, cocktail-sipping Hamptons, helicopter-riding freak who throws drinks at their colleagues. It's just... I've been on one of those shows to know that they're partially scripted, so they're not a reflection of real life to begin with.
Right.
And
thank
number
you.
Two, they are they're designed to entertain.
Exactly.
These poor
yes.
people are being used
yes.
to entertain very cheaply, by the way, because to put together a reality TV show is significantly cheaper than all others.
Yeah.
And for the people who participate in it, it has given them, you know, name recognition, which is very, very valuable in the real estate industry. And I think a lot of people don't even watch the shows who hire those people to see just how atrociously they behave at times, unethically, it's really horrible. Not every one of them and not all the time, but some of the stuff that I've seen, and I don't watch it, but some of the stuff that I have seen has pained me.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that completely. Talking about pain, right? If I could think of the one thing that hurts me the most about doing business is people not actually caring about the business that they're doing.
Yeah.
That hurt, that annoys. You know, you have these ticks, you got these pet peeves. You have to care about what you're doing.
Yes.
Like, I read this thing the other day. It says anything you do it says anything you do is you do it the same way as everything you do. Anything you do it as everything you do. So you have to take pride or give yourself, like, for me, if I'm involved in something, I'm going to make sure that I want to be involved in it to make sure that it's done correctly, or I'm not going to be involved in it. I think that's one of the things a lot of real estate agents miss, at least the young ones especially. Some of the veterans, they've been in it for a while. I guess they might be able to, you know.
Well, you know, I've sold billions of dollars worth of real estate over an extended period of time, may I add.
If we add up the years,
it's not that great.
No, but I've sold
a lot of real estate. I've sold a lot of very expensive real estate. And still to this day, if I see a toilet that isn't clean, I will scrub it clean.
Yeah.
So I do think that you sometimes get a group of people who come in and think this is just quick, easy money. And at times in the market, it can be. And sometimes you can have lucky spurts, and the minute you rely on luck is the minute you're in trouble. But I think you sometimes get the worst thing that can ever creep into anyone is arrogance. And the minute you have arrogance in the equation, that's when you can be certain trouble looms ahead.
Mm. And clients spot that.
Yes.
And they don't want to work with someone arrogant.
No, and I think a lot of the clients I've had to deal with on the high end are unbelievably successful. I had one client who fired their previous agent because their agent told them, come on, it's only another $1.5 million.
Wow.
And she looked at her agent and said, since when did $1.5 million become just something to add in and get over it? Now, granted, some of these buyers, especially in Manhattan, are incredibly wealthy. Some of the sellers are very wealthy. But still, to belittle that is an arrogance that no agent can succumb to, because they don't have $1.5 million in their pocket or bank accounts.
Yeah.
And usually they are the ones who have huge debt. The more arrogant they are, the more the debt.
Yeah, yes. I totally get that. It makes sense,
yeah. So, go ahead, Leonard, right? Talking about business, people might see Leonard today, right? And they said, I want to be like this guy.
Old and tired? Look at me.
No. You're hip. You're stylish.
I like your style.
You have great energy.
You're full of passion.
You're very successful. And as a young agent coming into the business, or even someone that's been in for 5 years, whatever, still young, relatively, they're seeing you now, right? I'm more concerned. I like the process. I love the journey, right? What are some of the things that you did in when you first started? Because the transition going into, like I said, going from real fashion, music, jumping into real estate, I know it wasn't easy. It couldn't have been, right? But you're one of the nation's top agents now. How did that happen? You know, like, what do you think?
A long journey. Yeah. Look, I think if I were to break it down into more simplistic terms, because I think it's almost unfair to give it a simple answer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a much more complex answer, but the simpler answer is there are certain basics in life and in business that apply to everything you do. And if you adhere to those consistently, you will succeed ultimately. And the keys are honesty,
follow up,
doing your homework, working really hard, reading a lot, learning a lot, being passionate about what you do. I think the basics, those you can kind of automatically extrude from your inner soul, because that's that you should know as a human being by the time you're in your 20s. And then you can read a lot too. I also think what's great about real estate, not unlike theater or a whole host of other things that happen in Manhattan, you have a great opportunity to reinvent yourself. You also have to remind yourself that you are the brand that people are going to be most connected to. There's a lot of print and there's a lot of other stuff, but the face-to-face and the dialogue you have in your emails and your texts and your phone calls, all of those add up, and the key is to be 100% consistent and authentic throughout the process. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt to have a fake British accent like mine, I will say. And this is fake because it's not real.
Is that real?
It's South African. So mixed with German because my parents were German and I lived in Texas, so who knows what happened there.
We're international. We're international.
I'm
Haitian, Jamaican, and South African.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
You know, we live in a global world, and there's no one anymore who's from United States or from one place anymore. It's very global.
That's going to bring me to my next point, right? Now, ecological economics.
Yes.
Are you familiar with the term?
Somewhat familiar, but tell me where this is going. Right.
So the relationship between the earth and man-made economics, right? We're going to talk about that. We're about to get deep right now.
Oh yeah.
I hope there's vodka in this bottle. Is there such a thing as Fiji vodka?
You know what? We might have to invent that.
No, we're going to talk about the relationship between money and the earth.
Yes.
Okay? It's very important. People don't really think about it, and they don't really take the time to think about what we're actually... That is terrible.
That's your agent.
That is so terrible.
It wasn't me.
Sorry.
Usually is me, by the way.
It's usually you.
It's the first time I'm not in trouble.
I thought I turned it off. Okay, sorry. Let's get back to the business that we're dealing with here. Relationship between money and the earth. Man-made money and the earth. And we're going to take out little bits and pieces of it because I want us to really get down to something, and I really want to know what your thoughts are when it comes to this particular subject, right? So the idea is, what do you think we can do better as a people to keep the earth producing like it ought to and not declining like it is? Because global warming is real. I don't care what anyone wants to say. It is a real topic. It is something that's happening. I want to know what your thoughts are. How can we keep this, the earth producing like it should, and not have it decline into a state where we are?
It's a very, very critical topic, not just to us who are talking real estate and home,
right,
or the people who are running around with a tambourine, but it's actually a huge topic of conversation in every boardroom around the world.
Right.
I do believe that those who deny, let's say it's not global warming, let's call it climate change. I think the biggest argument is that, is it man-made or is it not man-made? I almost think we have to sweep that out of the door and not worry about that, because we could argue for and against that. I think what we need to focus on is, what can we do better? And I think what we can do better is not about them or that person over there or that corporation or that government or that leader.
Right.
I think it's about what can each and every individual, each and every one of us, what can we do? And just to give an example, I have right now in my hand a plastic cup. I shouldn't have a plastic cup. It should be a paper cup. What I do now, and I noticed this several months ago, I work out in my gym. I have a gym in the building. I work out, and every day I go there, I used to pick up a plastic cup and do my workout and then throw the plastic cup away. For the last 8 months, I've been using the same plastic cup again and again and again. I bring it home, I put it in the fridge. There are small things that add up so dramatically when they're done on extraordinary scale.
I read the other day that an airport was trying to get rid of plastic bottles. Was it San Francisco or right? It was trying to get rid of the plastic bottles, which makes sense to me.
Well, I always think the best way to improve things is to start by looking at yourself in the mirror. I think when everyone starts there, the chances of success are going to be much, much greater. The minute people start looking across the fence to their neighbor and say, well, they should be doing this, and why did they do this? I think those people who have an opportunity to change what they're doing, set an example to others, and then it becomes contagious. But I do think, I'm very excited because I'm an eternal optimist. I think that we are at a state now of heightened awareness that has never existed before in our existence, that we have a responsibility to this planet that we have neglected and that we have to change. And I think I'm seeing change happen dramatically. In fact, if you look back to the Bloomberg administration, who initiated extraordinary changes to just the plumbing systems of New York City, so that the low flush toilets and the low usage showers, and we're saving millions and millions of gallons a day of water. Then if you look at the million trees that were planted in New York City.
I planted one of those trees.
Amazing. And everyone
in my mom's backyard.
Amazing.
I got it from
right?
park. Yeah, I got it from the park in a park.
And it's the system is unbelievable. You can call 311 and organize a tree planted for free.
I got one.
So these little baby steps done by the not thousands or the hundred thousands, but by the millions is the dream, I think, that we are beginning to realize now that the awareness changes. But America is a huge polluter. But it is a small fraction of a planet. We have 300-something million people out of 7.5 billion.
If you
go to other parts of the world right now, by the way, if Notre Dame in Paris was burning right now, we would all have CNN on and we'd be all panicking and the billionaires of the world would be writing huge checks. But right now, thousands of acres are burning in the Amazon and there's nothing on the news.
Nothing.
So we're very selective in the commerce world as to which causes bring us some notoriety, potential financial gain.
Right.
And I think in unselfish, non-arrogant behaviors of self-inflection, you will probably find the ultimate cure for all of this. Just look at yourself in the mirror. What are you doing? What can you do? And do it.
You know, for me, right, I am always looking for the right relationship. I'm always looking for the right relationship. Right relationships are harmonious. Right relationships are what keep you afloat. Right relationships help you do business correctly. And to your point, looking in the mirror, that relationship that you have with yourself, it has to be the most honest relationship. It has to be the most decent relationship. And more importantly, it has to reflect out on others so others can see themselves in you. At least that, I think, is one thing that a lot of the people who are in places of influence don't really take the time to look at.
I also think the big one is accountability, self-accountability. Holding others accountable is one thing, but standing up and saying, I'm going to take responsibility.
Yeah.
I'm going to take accountability, and I'm actually going to pick up that piece of garbage on the floor and throw it away. You know, I think everyone who takes on that level of responsibility, knowing that we're all collectively in this together, is, I think, doing something that will really matter. But I think the key is to get the word out, to repeat it, and to set great examples.
Yeah, definitely. I have a myopic approach, right? I don't try to multitask so much. Like Gene is a multitasking.
He has to be. He's a broker.
I don't know. I'm a myopic type of a guy. I concentrate on things that I really like. Okay, so I was instrumental in helping the School of Medicine, where I'm at right now at New York College, to revamp a class on multiculturalism in medicine. Okay? When you say diversity and inclusion, right, that means everyone. That means everyone. You cannot exclude anyone. And one of the things is that most, sticking with this whole, you know, ecological economics, the money that we're making right now and what good it can do for the planet. The idea is for us to keep focus on each other, right? So this is why it's medicine, but I think in business, we need that diversity and inclusion. The Amazon's burning down and there's nothing. You see what I'm saying?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yes.
But I think what happens is there's an economic hypocrisy around the world.
Well, okay.
That is a problem as well. I think politically speaking as well, I think it's very important for us to acknowledge that 70% of the world exists in the practical center. And then you have 15% on the extreme right of things and the 15% on the extreme left of things that dictate and control the narrative 365, 24/7. And let's face it, if we were to look at our own lives individually, mm-hmm. we are practical. Mm-hmm. When we get paid a lot of money for a closing, for instance, we go and pay off a credit card bill. We don't go out and spend more. Mm-mm. So the practical realities of life that we apply to ourselves, politicians don't do, because they're only obsessed with power and control. Mm. And at one point, we're going to have to start getting practical about everything. Because right now what we're having are swings from one extreme to the other and back and forth, and it's just unproductive and it's a waste of our money.
Exactly. Let me ask you a question. What is your greatest asset?
My fake accent.
That's your greatest asset?
No. I think, you know what my greatest asset
is? I was like, no.
No, my greatest asset, I would say, is I'm extremely, extremely fortunate in that I grew up in a family where honesty and ethics mattered. They really did matter. And the basics of being punctual, having good manners, speaking properly, speaking when spoken to, responding, following up, all of those things really mattered. And I was taught lessons up to the age of 18 when I was set free into the planet that I think have had value to me for the rest of my life. I don't think everyone has that gift. I think in a world where parents are working two jobs or are distracted by reality television shows mm-hmm. or are doing a whole host of other things that take away from the intense responsibility of parenting, mm-hmm. I was very fortunate in that I had two parents who were not perfect by all means, and I can tell you stories, but I don't want to. But they taught me the basics, and those basics resonate with you for life. So that, like, to me is the biggest gift of all.
Yeah, I understand. What's your biggest asset, Gene?
Mine?
Yeah.
My smile.
Yeah,
if I had teeth like that. Oh.
Well, you know what? I believe it's the same thing. You know, my parents poured so much into me. And one thing from my dad is just seeing the consistency. And something that you said earlier about being consistent is, because I read somewhere that you said you have like ADD, right?
Total ADD.
Yeah. And I think a lot of successful entrepreneurs have ADD, right? But you did one thing that's really consistent. And I want to know, because I have ADD, how do you put out for the last 4 or 5 years?
5 years and 2 months.
5 years and 2 months. You know where I'm going. 5 years and 2 months, the email that you send out every single day at around 7 o'clock.
Well, this is something I call it my contemplation. I do an email to the entire company every single morning.
Gene shares it with me. He sends me something.
365 days, 7 days a week. I do it every single day. And right. It has been the best thing for me, because what it allows me to do is, number one, know that it has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose is mm-hmm. to communicate content. That's number one. I provide content, then we showcase listings, mm-hmm. and then I give a perspective that I hope fuels the culture of the company, that I hope fuels a certain sense of ethics, and most importantly, I feel it connects us all scattered around the country in over 300 offices, over 15,000 people,
wow.
staff and agents all working together, but yet working in separate planets, that they come together at one place in the morning and feel connected. And for me, it has been the greatest gift, because suffering from ADD, mm-hmm. to be able to do that religiously and committed,
right.
in a committed way is unbelievably difficult. And yet, knowing that I have to do it mm-hmm. is the ultimate gift, because there are no options.
Yeah. That's that self-determination.
Because I actually look forward to it. So sometimes I have to refresh my email to make sure. I'm like, all right, where is it?
once or twice I've pressed the wrong button for the send and it doesn't show up, and people are like, are you dead? It's like, yes, I am dead. You know, how would you respond to that?
So now, talking about branding and that consistency, right? What made you, because you didn't just start sending out emails five years, 2 months ago. Was email one of the tools in the beginning that you...
Oh, let me remind you. I started a long time ago.
Before email right?
was just
Yeah,
beginning.
Just beginning. That's when everybody had an AOL.
It's funny. I actually sent my first e-blast uh-huh. about 21 years ago. And the owner of a brokerage in the city called me immediately and said, how dare you send this? You have clogged up my email with something that is solicitous and it is advertising, and how dare you? And he still runs his company today, and every time I see him, I remind him of this story because I said, I just received 7 emails from your company today doing exactly what I did 21 years ago. This is one thing I've learned in business, and it's a lesson I learned from fashion. In fashion, you have to look at where the trends are heading, not where the trends were. Mm. And I've always been looking a few steps ahead to see what could be coming next. You don't necessarily want to be a revolutionary, and I personally don't believe in revolutions because they're bloody and messy, but I like evolutionary steps that collectively lead up to revolutionary movement. And I think this was very, very this was one item that I started doing many years ago, but I've always tried. I was the first advertiser in The Real Deal. I took out a full page in The Real Deal and committed to 12 months. And they were like, oh, my God, we have an advertiser.
They're like, thank you.
But I knew brokers wanted to read about the business, and there was one place to read it. I've done a lot of things. I started staging 16 years ago when we bought a full set of furniture to stage. And now today, everyone is staging. We did our own website 14 years ago. I started my monthly newsletter over 15 years ago. We just celebrated the 15-year
anniversary. The Luxury Letter.
Luxury Letter goes out every single month, 12 months a year, every single month. And it's a lot of work. It's a huge investment. But I've never... There are two types of money spending. One is spending and the other is investing. And if you get the investing right, you're going to be fine with the spending.
So how do you feel about that? A lot of agents or a lot of business people don't want to, they don't see the value in advertising. They don't want to spend the money. They just think that, hey, I'm in business, you should deal with me because I'm a nice guy. What's your thoughts about that? Because I know you spend a lot of money on advertising, branding, marketing. What's your relationship with that? And what advice would you give them?
I think the key is to understand why you don't want to spend money on advertising. And the key usually is, I don't want to spend the money because I'm fearful that it's not going to produce the results I want. In fear and anxiety lies ignorance. Mm-hmm. You have to understand why you're being fearful. And once you've broken that down, then you can understand what is the calculated return on investment. And I think this is the big one. You don't necessarily have to spend the most money to be the most effective, but you have to have a strategy and you have to have a plan. And there are multiple tools at your disposal today, one of which is an e-blast, but the other is social media that affords you the opportunity to get the message out broadly for free and also inexpensively if you do paid social. So I think as the world changes, new opportunities arise, and there's not a single company in the planet that has been on this planet that has been successful without investing in their future. And advertising is one component of marketing. It's critical, but is it print? Is it digital? Is it, you know, a whole host of other things? There are multiple ways to market to a wealthier consumer. And we live in New York, everything's expensive. So we have to remind ourselves we're marketing to a wealthy consumer who can afford to buy a home in New York. It's expensive. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, that's only $500,000. Mm-hmm. It's like, why don't you get $500,000 bills and pile them up in front of you just to see how much money that is? It's a fortune.
It is a fortune.
Being in New York City, right? We're in New York City. It's September 11th today.
Yes.
We're in Manhattan. Today represents a lot for New Yorkers. And, you know, my prayers go out to all the families and everybody who suffered a loss during this time. And, you know, New Yorkers stood up that day. I remember I was actually driving my cousin to the airport because she's a flight attendant. Shout out to Sandy. And we were driving and we had it on, one of the radio stations. And they stopped the music and they said one of the towers got hit. And my cousin Sandy said, what tower are they talking about? And I pointed up and I said, that. And you just saw the smoke. And she, you know, we're not thinking, so we're just like, oh, okay, a plane accidentally hit a building, no problem, right? Unfortunate. But we didn't know. So we went to Kennedy and it was just like shut down. All flights. And she said, how am I getting home? And I said, well, you're going to have to come back to Long Island with me. And then all of a sudden, another one. Mm. And that's when I was like, okay, this is not an accident. This is panic. And, you know, we're New Yorkers, so it was just like everyone came together. I live in Long Island. Well, I lived in Long Island at the time this happened. So I remember going back to Deer Park and everyone coming together. And we were like, everyone was going into each other's houses like, don't stay home. We're under attack. So everyone, let's go to one house and let's be together. I remember calling people and everyone was like, I'm going downtown Manhattan to go see if we can help people downtown. So that day resonates a lot, but it also, there was a lot of tragedy, but there was also some other things that happened with the market. Interest rates after 9/11, interest rates went down. People started actually buying homes more. The refinance boom happened in the real estate business. This is 2001 now.
Right.
And is what, you know, what does 9/11 mean to you? And what do you, you know, what's your thoughts?
Well, I think 9/11 is a monument to the human spirit and the resilience of New Yorkers.
Yes.
I think it is the ultimate monument. And what I do feel, and I knew people who actually lost their lives in 9/11, their lives were not lost in vain.
No. Me too.
I think their lives actually have given the rest of New Yorkers and America a gift that lasts forever. Because what was once perceived as a total disaster and the end of the world actually turned out to be the birth of an entirely new world. Mm. I would suspect that in the last 5 years, more people have visited that area than in the prior 50 years. The volume of investment that went in there to build is, it's millions and millions of square feet. And it's not just a financial community. That entire community has become a living, working, breathing community.
It's true.
And it's not just finance, it's the tech industry, the fashion community, the media enterprises there. It's the most astounding FU to a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
You know, it's saying, you come and do this to New York and we'll show you. And boy, did we show them how resilient the city is. I think the whole country rallied around New York as well. I mean, they were tremendous tragedies in other parts of the country too,
as well,
on the same day. But I think most importantly, it sent a message that the human spirit is designed to overcome and survive. And on 9/11, we witnessed that day, the weeks afterwards. But more importantly, it didn't die there. It is forever afterwards altered the face of Manhattan. And it has changed an entire city because of that.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. I mean, if you look at New York today and you see Google expanding, Amazon expanding, Disney, Apple, I mean, this is a whole revolution that happened to Manhattan and New York City that I don't think might have happened as quickly and as effectively had it not been for 9/11. So in many ways, I think it is a beautiful ending to a horrible story. And it's not over.
Yeah. No, it's not over.
It's not over.
It made our lives at airports miserable forever. Afterwards.
Yes, yes.
Miserable. And it's still not good.
I think it made New York safer also.
It made New York safer. It made New Yorkers more aware. More importantly, I think it made people around the world aware of the fragility of life and the importance of enjoying day to day. We forget that quite easily. But when you see people's lives lost in an instant and that intense volume of suffering, you can understand just how important life is and how one shouldn't take it for granted, not even for a second.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So my condolences, our condolences to everyone who suffered any loss today, back in 2001. Yeah.
I just gotten back actually from Capri and Provence, and it was the exact opposite of this extraordinary moment to this tragic moment. But I commend also the first responders and all the people for years afterwards, not just the weeks, but the years afterwards, who had to deal with this Herculean task of undoing all that damage, putting together all the evidence, you know, and then creating that extraordinary memorial. Which is beyond belief.
It's beautiful.
And that has become now a world attraction. There is not a single person who speaks about New York or a visit to New York without mentioning that, which certainly is.
So it's like a massive win for New York.
It was a miracle, I think.
Yeah.
The aftermath was a miracle.
Yeah, a miracle. Yeah, definitely, definitely. That's one of the things where I think that the ecology of the earth, our whole space that we're living in right now, and how the behavior change that's needed for us to really take a look at what's happening around us. 9/11 actually exemplified that.
Well, it accelerated it. And I think from that moment on, you saw just the tree planting. I think the awareness of the air we're breathing in.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, because the air you breathed in for the weeks after that was just horrific.
Yes, sure, yes.
So I think there was this awareness that fueled that. But I've always said with business and life, if you look at nature really closely, you will find all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
But in architecture today, I think there is an astounding awareness of the environment. It's astounding now. And mm-hmm. I speak to architects all the time and developers. Mm-hmm. You have LEED certification. There's a type of building now called passive house
LEED
systems.
Yeah, LEED.
And there's a passive house system now where you build a house and it actually doesn't require any energy to run it at all because a solar panel or geothermal plant will...
Leadership in energy and environmental design.
Exactly, exactly. But these are amazing moves forward. And you look at the energy usage of most commercial buildings now, it's dropped by, 20, 30, 40%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's astounding when you take again the human brain and capacity and will and energy... And you mix it with technology, and then you have miracles.
Exactly. During the 23, 24 years you've been in real estate, you had some ups, there's some downs. What advice would you give anybody in business, not just realtors and brokers? How, with the lows, markets go up and down. We know that. How do you keep consistent or... What advice would you give to stay, to rise back up? Because some people are just like, oh, you know what? This is not for me. And they leave. But they just couldn't stand, I don't think they were in the business for the right reason in the first place. That's why they always say the weak leave when the market changes,
Well, quitting is always the easiest thing to do.
Yes, it is.
It is just so easy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, so if you want to do the easy route, you quit.
Uh-huh.
But I think the key to being in business, whether it's in real estate brokerage or any business, is you have to assume that good times may be followed by some not so good times. And the other piece of advice I would say is in all times, good and bad, there's always opportunity. Because a recession, there's a lot of chatter about recession, but yes. I heard an interesting statistic today that even in boom times, mm-hmm. 20% of financial people are worried about a recession.
Mm-hmm.
So people worry a lot more than reality.
Yeah, right.
And when there's an economic growth period, it is usually followed by a decline or a mm-hmm. stabilization period. And who knows when that happens or how it happens. It will happen at some point. But the indicators we see right now are very, very strong. Critical to everyone's assessment of the American economy is, are people working and earning a living?
Yes.
Because jobs is everything. But getting back to your question, how do you prepare for the difficult times? You have to adjust to difficult times and you have to adjust to good times. There's only one certainty in life and business. Change.
Change.
And if you are constantly aware that you have to change, you have to adapt, you'll be fine. But when I went through difficult real estate times, the key for me to survive that and thrive and still have my wits about me was having savings. One of the biggest mistakes any business or individual can have during tough times is not having some kind of security blanket. Because if you have the security cushion, it, number one, provides for you, but number two, it helps you think more clearly and rationally mm-hmm. and removes that element of desperation that often leads to poor decision making.
Yeah.
But in bad – look, the great thing about real estate brokerage is whether the economy is up or down, people get married, they die, they have babies, they get divorced. Life goes on. When a recession happens, a recession means that an economy isn't growing as quickly. There may be not as many transactions. I always say, be conservative with your finances as step one. If you're conservative with your finances, you sleep better at night and you certainly perform better when things are tougher. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Always.
Exactly. That is the God honest truth.
Leonard, you read a lot, right?
I read a lot.
I believe it. What is one of your, I'll let you finish. What is one of your favorite books?
Okay. Making Friends and Influences.
See, you know, I love Winning Friends and Influencing People by Dale Carnegie.
Dale Carnegie,
I think
okay.
It is the best book. You know why? Because I think it's a book that was written 60 years ago, I think, and it still rings true today. Mm-hmm. That's a great book for business specifically, but also for life, because I think it teaches you a lot of lessons that maybe your parents didn't teach as well as they should have. Mm-hmm. So I think it has great value. The other endorsement for Dale Carnegie, I would say, is the fact that Warren Buffett there's only one certificate on his wall, and that is a Dale Carnegie course, because if you can learn to be humanly proactive and humanly confident and comfortable in the way you present yourself and your ideas, you will have success in life. So that's my number one favorite book by far. Thank you for remembering. Yeah, very impressive. And then the other book that I love, I haven't read. So there's one book for business that I think is great, and it says, it's not business, it's personal.
Yeah.
And I think that's the greatest title for a business book, especially if you're in marketing.
I saw that book the other day.
It's an amazing book because it tells you everything you need to know about marketing.
Audible. I saw it on Audible. I was like, oh, what is this?
We might have to send that to you as an Audible gift.
It's not business, it's personal.
But that's true, though. It is not business. It is personal. And if you really take a look at it carefully and delve into what you're doing, you'll understand that it is personal.
Well, it's human. We're humans. That's the problem. If we were selling from a machine to another machine, you don't need a human.
No.
But if you're selling to humans, or if you're marketing to humans, you have to have a human element to it.
That reminds me here.
I think we're about to ask the same thing.
NY-RAC. Were you about to ask about
it? No, I thought you were talking about the...
No, NY-RAC.
So, yes.
What is your role with NY-RAC? And when you finish, I want to read something that actually caught my eye off of the mission statement of NY-RAC. So let's hear your role, and then I'll read
it. It's the New York Residential Agents Continuum, and it is a group of agents that I helped form. I'm one of the founding board members, and I helped found it with a group of wonderful agents from multiple brokerages, with the intent of elevating the representation of agents in the industry, because we want to do that which is best for the consumer.
Right.
We don't want to do what's necessarily best for agents, but the agent's voice in the equation is so important, because we are the eyes and ears of the consumer, and we have to be able to relate to our industry and our profession what it'll require to make our profession really cater to the consumer in the future.
The mission statement that I like, it says, our mission is to clearly define, maintain, and encourage best practices, standardization of process and terminology with an emphasis on the best interest of the customer. We advocate for our members on a wide range of issues and topics relating to the betterment of the profession, and to intend to use our influence to encourage positive change for our industry and to emphasize importance for ethical practice.
I love the sound of that. It's music to my ears. Yes. See, there's my music career. It's back.
No,
it's
like, back, right? Like, when I read that, I was like, these people are actually doing the right thing.
Yeah, no, that's doing the right thing.
And you know what? I think when you do the right thing, you're probably going to be successful at it. So this has been extraordinarily successful already in just the year that it's been around, because for the first time...
It's a good move.
It's a great move, because agents are the eyes and ears of the consumer.
I love it.
And they need to be heard.
I love it. I totally love it. I want to go back to best asset.
Yes.
Since I come from a healthcare professional background, and I tend to look at it that way, I get that perspective, every human being on this planet's greatest asset is their health.
Yes.
Yes.
Nothing beats that.
Nothing.
Nothing beats it. We have all these other good things and all these other things that we really, but from where I come from and when I look at it, Leonard, our health is our greatest asset.
It is everything.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. So with that being said, I want to just ask you, like, What do you think your employees need or would require to live the healthiest and best life that they possibly can?
Well, I do think one of the greatest unspoken health damages that a company has control over, because I think whether someone goes out drinking too much or taking drugs or not exercising, all those things, that you really don't have too much control over. But what you do have control over is how can you minimize stress? Stress is the silent killer.
Love it.
And
I
if a company or corporation can do everything in its power to minimize the stress of its people, make their lives at work enjoyable and productive, and have them be successful at what they do, that to me is an enormous component to one's physical well-being.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, I do think, you know, in the company we have healthcare for agents, we have dentists who come to the office, we have therapists, we have all sorts of screening programs. Mm-hmm. So we try and introduce all sorts of tools that may have a benefit to agents from the obvious health perspective. But in my opinion, the number one health detriment to agents and people, professionals in the real estate industry, is the extraordinary levels of stress. And worse than that, I've worked in other companies where the culture in the company is one that you don't enjoy being in, and there's a lot of backstabbing and ugly unpleasantries. I think really working at that is very, very meaningful in improving the health of the people we work with.
And all that you just said, I would like to sum it up into one word. Comfort.
Yep. Yes. It's true.
Huh? It's true.
So yeah? True.
I just, when you were saying that, I was like, oh my goodness, I want to be in Lenny's company.
Well, why not have a nice office? Why not serve a good lunch? Instead of having a snack tray full of junky, sugary foods,
right.
You have some alternatives that are healthy.
Right.
There's so many components to a health. How many hours do you spend in an office? Hours and hours and hours.
Unstoppable.
So it's almost as much as you spend sleeping, and a lot of offices and work environments are so unpleasant. Why? That can be changed, and I do think there's a movement behind that, because to attract the best people today, you better have a good environment to work in.
It's true.
You know, when I was at Columbia University, one of the things that saddened me a lot of the times was people who kill themselves, you know, and that's from the stress. And you hear that, and you're
like, depression is a very, very dark subject that has an embarrassment attached to it that's so bad. I actually had a neighbor in my building commit suicide, and I was like, I thought this person had everything in the world.
Yeah.
She was beautiful.
Yeah.
She was living with a rock star. She lived in a gorgeous apartment. She had apartment in Paris. She had this incredible life.
Right.
And then she kills herself because she's depressed. But depression can set in very quickly.
Very quickly.
It can go dark very, very quickly. And in those moments of intense darkness, it can lead to, you know, something tragic. The best thing is, though, is if you're in an environment where you know you are supported, where you know there's someone to lean on to, where if you really feel dark, you can reach out to someone because you know they're going to care.
And they're not going to judge you.
You got it.
Yeah.
And I do think the judgment is probably the worst part of depression, because when you say you're depressed these days, it's not cool. You know, everyone says you've got to be positive.
Yeah.
Well, my shrink was brilliant. He said, when you're feeling sad, it's okay to feel sad. People feel sad.
Yeah,
people feel
right.
But
it's
when people feel sad and everyone's like, oh, you're a negative person, it's not because you're negative. You're feeling sad.
Yeah,
it's just, speak to someone.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that when you do have someone to speak to, it minimizes the effects of it dramatically, although a lot of it's chemical too.
Leonard, I have a couple more questions for you, and then and I know time is limited. So
it's of the essence.
Yeah.
And
these are just... Do you have a mentor, or did you have a mentor?
I did have a mentor. I had when I was in fashion, my business partner's father founded a company called First Data Resources that is today a $20 billion company.
Yeah, First Data Resources.
It's a huge company. Every time you swipe your credit card, they get a few pennies. It's a great business model.
Wow.
And he taught me some really amazing essentials in business, so he was a mentor to me for several years that is invaluable. I would also say my dad was a mentor because he owned his own business. And I wasn't into business growing up, but I heard everything at the dinner table, and there was a lot of discussion around business, and that has always been very, very beneficial long term.
Okay. So what drives you today, Leonard?
Right.
Well, I'm in my mid-50s, and I am at the, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I think I have a responsibility now to give back to the next generation and previous generations of people entering my professional field. Mm-hmm. So I focus a little bit more on that, sharing knowledge, trying to collaborate with a lot of different people on a lot of different projects, and providing as much insight and opinion to benefit the growth of this company to become something really important in the lives of thousands and thousands of agents who ultimately will benefit the lives of hundreds of thousands of consumers.
One thing as a salesperson, you're trained sort of to tell everybody all the great things that your company does,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
But you train people or encourage people to listen versus just tell and sell.
Yes.
You stated one time, you don't sell real estate, you market real estate.
Yes.
Can you please explain that?
Well, I think as real estate agents, you become like 60-second psychologists. Mm. Within the first 60 seconds, you have to do a lot of listening and looking and absorbing to understand who your audience is. Mm-hmm. And then not chameleon to give them the answers they want to hear, mm-hmm. but to learn to speak and communicate with them in such a manner that they actually listen to you and feel acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And I think in that communication style lies the greatest benefit, because people, if they are not heard or if they're preached to or lectured, don't listen.
Don't listen.
And agents have a tendency, myself at times, I don't listen. And it's a real detriment. You have to listen very, very closely. Mm. You have to observe body language. You have to observe certain expressions. And in that lies extraordinary opportunity to market in a clever, intelligent way that's honest and genuine as well. Because I don't think what you want to do is figure out what this person will and won't like to hear and then just con them into believing what you're selling.
Right.
That's not going to work. I've always proactively volunteered the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
I give it to the full picture nothing's perfect.
Mm. And my last one before I pass it on to you.
Right.
You said, time is luxury.
Time is the last luxury.
The last luxury.
Yes.
Sorry.
Time is the last luxury.
So explain that one to me.
Well, you're young. It's not the last luxury for you, but when you get into your 50s, time is the last luxury. No, I think the one resource we will never have enough of is time. And it's the only resource that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And we don't know when the end is. So in that lies so much. And I think when you look at a very materialistic world, and believe me, I enjoy materialistic things. I do. I'm not going to deny that. But I think you have to understand that you have to enjoy a lot more than the material things. And time really is the one entity that defines what you can and cannot do in life. And if you're sleeping 6 to 8 hours a night, and if you're working 8 to 14 hours a day, you better enjoy what you're doing, and you better make every moment count. So managing your time in business and in life is critical to everything.
I have a saying, and I said this a couple of times on the podcast, and Patrick actually redefined it for me. I used to say, I don't manage time, I manage task.
Yes.
He made me say, I don't manage task, I manage my energy. And once I...
Probably better, yes.
Yeah, it is better.
Thank you. Praise me, right?
So once I'm very self-aware, and once I really soaked it in and realized what he meant by it, I said, wow, you know what? I have to manage my energy more. And once I started managing the energy...
I'm full of them, by the way.
You are, man. Yeah, you know, so... You're a busy man, right?
Yes.
And how do you manage? Do you use a planner? Like, what tools do you use?
Well, since my brain is fried, I actually use my calendar to position myself wherever I have to be.
Only your phone?
Only my phone.
Wow.
And in that, I will position myself for appointments, for meetings, but I will also book a massage, a dentist appointment, a dinner.
Yeah.
I will book time to read. Yeah. I will book everything.
In the phone.
And
so you don't write anything down?
I write very little down.
Wow.
If you saw my handwriting, you may understand. Because there have been times where I've stared at something I wrote down.
Yeah.
I type everything and I avoid my writing because it's so horrific.
Wow. I'm sorry. I was just shocked about that part because I have ADD, right? And I know that if I pull out this phone, I actually removed email from my phone.
Mm.
Just because I want control. I want to only use this phone just for phone calls and texts.
I like
right?
that.
I have a tablet with, because I had tablet with email, phone with email, laptop with email, desktop with email, the same email. So regardless of where I was, email was following me. Yeah. And I said, no, I don't want to be a prisoner to email.
Well, we live in a hyper distracted planet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, this world is so full of distractions, it's frightening.
Yeah, right. So I have a planner that I write the task down, right? And then control my energy. Because if I put the task in my calendar, as soon as I go into the calendar, a text comes in. And then I leave that, and then I go, and I forget, and I probably check it off by accident, and I now it's gone.
Welcome to my world.
I see your Columbia Blue. Are you gonna? I got my Columbia Blue suit on.
I love Columbia Blue.
Real quick before we let you go, ethical relativism, right? And truth-telling. Right? I want you to really think of these two issues, right? For you, we touched on it a little bit, but I want you to clarify how important are these two issues to the entrepreneur. Please, let it be known.
Well, I think the biggest fear people have around truth mm-hmm. is that the truth is often not that pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is not simple.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is not easy, especially if you're looking at the full picture of everything. So I think I always believe in giving the full picture and extrapolating from that, that which is great, and then that which requires attention and work. And I think if you do that with everything in life, you're going to have a wonderful, wonderful life, but more importantly, you'll sleep very well. Everything I do in life is very, very selfishly based on the fact that I enjoy my sleep. And if I've done something that wasn't the right choice, it resonates, it sticks. And if I'm not sleeping, I know it was the wrong thing to do, and then you have to fix it. But
right.
I do think the fear most people have with truth is that it's really not all that pleasant. Sometimes truths are very difficult to deal with, but when you take accurate inventory, thorough inventory, mm-hmm. and see the full picture the way it really is,
mm-hmm.
that's when you can come up with real solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Until that moment, the solutions are Band-Aids.
I got you. For heart surgery.
Not a good idea.
No, not a good idea. Now, we touched on it one more thing, and then diversity and inclusion.
Yes.
What does that actually mean to you? Give me your definition of diversity and inclusion, because it's a big topic nowadays.
Yes, yes.
I graduated from Columbia with the Multiculturalism Award, just to give myself a
look.
Brianna even laughs.
I just gotta say that. Come on.
Living in New York City, you cannot exist in a tiny little bubble of people just like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that's one gift of being in New York City, is that the multiculturalism within this city alone defines multiculturalism.
Right.
And
exactly.
I think one has to embrace it rather than fight it. I think a lot of people, again, are fearful of multiculturalism
mm-hmm.
because, look, I grew up in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was, I grew up in the worst time in South Africa, where apartheid was
strong.
Strong. It was, it was a monster. And look what happened to apartheid.
Right,
it
right.
was destroyed
right, right.
because of what? Not conscience as much as money.
Mm.
And it's amazing to me how when people look at multiculturalism, and if they aren't convinced that it's a good thing from a ethical perspective, but mm-hmm. are convinced that it's good for everyone and it's good for business too,
mm-hmm.
that's probably the easiest sales pitch to get people to come around
mm-hmm.
to the concept that it really does work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also think, though, that coming to America, you know, everyone talks about immigration, and I'm an immigrant. And mm-hmm. by the way, I immigrated here illegally.
Mm.
So I'm an illegal immigrant
who changed
my status, had to go back. Don't arrest me.
Yeah, no. Trump, stay away.
Look, I think immigration for me is such a gift. To be an American is the most extraordinary gift imaginable.
Mm-hmm.
And I really respect that my parents taught me the value of being an immigrant, because they came from Germany.
Mm.
They learned the language, they assimilated. But you know what? They also, our household was like living in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
They had German music, German magazines, German this. So embracing that and embracing your environment that you are in, I think, is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, you know, there's no such thing as pure white or pure black anywhere in the world.
Right, exactly.
What is that?
Right.
Like,
right.
And then if you go back, you know, the real truths, when you go back several hundred years ago, they say behind every great fortune lies a great crime. A lot of the great fortunes are the gilded names of our day and age. You have to go very, 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 very far back, thousands of years probably, to find out absolute truth. So instead of fighting, just embrace.
Mm-hmm. Embrace.
And I do think that we're all human beings at the end of the day. I think if we're all respectful of one another and embrace one another, the world becomes a better place for everyone.
Mm-hmm. You know what, Leonard? One of the things we need to check in order to start embracing each other, unconscious bias, they're there.
Totally.
People have them.
Yes.
You understand? And if you start checking those unconscious bias, it will give us a chance to actually embrace each other and let us know that there's no one's skin thicker than anybody else's skin.
But no one has no bias.
Right.
And the worst part of it is most people's bias, they don't even know they have it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So that unconscious bias, like, okay, for instance, I took a bias test at Harvard University, right? So they showed me a picture of a white man and a black man, and they asked me who was lying.
And oh,
I was like, oh my God. Right?
Just based on a picture?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So now you're like, and I'm like, wait a minute. Why would
Were they dressed the same?
It was a picture of a black man and a white man. And they said, which one is lying? And you have to pick. And I was like,
that's a crazy question.
That is a crazy question.
No, it's an unconscious bias exam.
But I also think it is also a reality that we are judged so much by appearances on everything.
Yeah.
If you walk into a home today of someone mm-hmm. dressed in torn jeans and a t-shirt, or you walk into that same home dressed the way you are today, you will be judged entirely differently.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So appearances today really, really matter. Mm-hmm. And I think there's certain biases that are grossly unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you are no different an agent, whether you're dressed in jeans and t-shirt or a suit, except for the fact that you're portraying a level of respect.
Yes.
Yeah, I like looking like this.
Me too.
I mean, you guys are so well dressed that it's a little intimidating in here.
Because it's, you know, it is respect. You know,
no, when definitely.
You know, respect for yourself.
Respect for yourself.
I like looking.
And also,
diggy.
My father used to tell me, you never want to have to apologize for your appearance.
No.
You know, so just stay on point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think this this unconscious bias is a big, big deal on every level.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
On every level. And it's something, I think awareness fuels solution.
Mm. I love that.
Honest, accurate inventory is the only basis for a solution.
I love that.
Yeah,
that is something, that is probably the business tip of the day.
Yeah, it is.
That's the business tip of the day.
Leonard.
And it's not mine. It's from my shrink.
Leonard, last question.
Yep.
So the show's called Faith, Grind, Inspire, right? Which one of those three words, and it could be, which one of those three words resonate with you the most and why? Faith, grind, inspire.
I think the one to me is faith. I have eternal faith because I think in faith lies optimism and a future. I think inspiring and grinding are great, although grinding, I haven't gone there yet, but I don't want to think about that.
Oh, you've been grinding.
I'm not going there.
Years.
But I will say faith is something I truly believe in, that you have to have faith in who you are, what you do. You have to have faith in your city, your country, your people, your neighbors.
Yourself.
You have to have faith in nature. You have to have faith in the planet.
Mm-hmm.
That there's always
God.
A solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
I really believe that you have to believe positively that the future is going to be better than the past.
Faith.
Yep.
I love it.
I like it.
You know what? I'm sorry. I do have one more question. It just popped up. And I actually, it's just a fun question. Is there any, like, a fun story, a real estate story that like something that happened and you just said, yo, this is funny, you know?
You know what? I make a point of laughing every single day about real estate because the alternative to laughing is crying.
Crying, yeah.
So you have to find something funny in everything. But I've had thousands of funny stories happen to me.
Imagine.
If you're living in New York City, every single day.
Yeah, right.
You have to laugh every
day. Right. It's true. It's true. Because so, it'll go crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah. So there's not one that just sticks out. Just give me one.
Oh, jeez. Is this an R-rated show?
No. You can say whatever you want.
I do recall once being locked out on a terrace and having to wave neighbors down to be rescued.
Really?
Wow.
I thought it was funny. Yeah. No one else did really, but I thought it was very funny.
You were showing an apartment?
I had my cell phone inside in those days. I didn't have it on me all the time, so that was certainly a funny one. But I've had others where I've been attacked by enormous birds in apartments, and I've dealt with bathroom situations that I will not describe.
So, you said birds were attacking you?
I was attacked by two parrots once in a showing. Really? Big parrots.
Oh, my God.
With feathers flying everywhere.
Oh, my God.
You see? I told you.
It's crazy stuff.
Dude, wow. Crazy. You made it. So, Leonard, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Where can people find you?
Yeah.
Where can they find me? Oh, God.
Everywhere, right? Just Google him, man.
I've been around.
Yeah, man. Google him. You'll be surprised, and you'll love some of Leonard's interviews, man. Yes. They're insightful, and you get to really get to know the guy, and you get to really learn a lot about real estate. And not only that, if you're interested in doing business, his philosophical way of doing business is on point.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. It is on point.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Yeah. And you're one of the reasons why I moved over.
I'd love to hear that.
Yes.
Definitely.
Because when I was Googling Compass, I've been researching Compass for the past year. And prior to that, I just started researching and seeing the people, the top agents, who they are. And I love the way Compass structures their pages, where they give each individual not just a picture and just a name and a phone number, but their bios and links and press. And even it's outside of real estate, they still include that. So you get to know who the person is.
Well, agents are people too.
Yes, agents are people too. Exactly. And
finally.
Because I tell people all the time, you're not in the real estate business, you're in the people business.
Totally.
And once you understand that, and you said this whole entire interview, you're in the people business, as long as you remember that, you will be successful. The agents that aren't successful, for me, is the agents that think they're in the real estate business. Because once you think you're in the real estate business, you start looking like a shark. You start looking like...
Well, a lot of people encourage you to be a shark. Yeah, that's the problem.
That's the problem.
Exactly.
That's a problem.
Exactly.
You know,
that's a problem. I couldn't associate with that. I just couldn't.
You have a show called Shark Tank.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
Is this a shark? Who's the best shark? Terrible.
I was in the tech division at Cablevision that I was working, and I got a call from a customer, and I started talking to the customer on the phone, and she goes, you know, with the customer service you give me, you would be an excellent real estate rep.
There you go.
And I was like, really? And I started to look into real estate, but then I was coming across these crazy people. I'm like...
Be careful.
Yeah.
I'm not a shark.
Tread carefully.
Yeah, I can't do it. I can't do it, Leonard. Anyway,
all right. So, guys, thank you, Leonard, for coming on. Thank you, Jeff, for being who you are, man.
Most welcome.
You're right?
Yeah.
And you can catch us. Thank you to all our listeners, our viewership,
please,
our subscribers. We appreciate you guys. Every Wednesday,
Tim and Jamie,
consistently, we've been releasing content to you. And I know you're going to enjoy this one. Thank you to our producers, Tim, Jamie, Brianna.
Shout out
to the OG Podcast Network.
OG.
Cumulus. And keep grinding.
Keep grinding.
Keep shining.
Keep shining.
And keep going no matter what.
And keep going no matter what. Peace.